Welcome to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Del challenges the status quo, questions everything, and empowers you to return to your core beliefs to make your life better. If you're ready to hear the truth and get your roadmap to the lifestyle you really want, the next hour will change your life. And now, your host, self-made millionaire, national award-winning investor of the year, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Wamsley.
Welcome to the Del Wamsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Wamsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Well, my friends, today I'm going to discuss a rather disjointed argument for the fact that the ability to be successful in many, many areas comes down to your ability to decipher, to understand the information in that area necessary to make the right decisions, and your accumulation of the correct information. So what I'm trying to say is that people want to think, they want to believe that there's a secret sauce. They want to believe, for instance, that there's a secret real estate trick. There's tricks, there's secrets, there's things. You can read them in a book, you can pick them up over the internet, and that those little things will be what is necessary to become successful. And I'm here today to suggest that that's just not the case. Is that there are millions of little tricks that we use every single day in investing in real estate and in or everything else in life, and that none of those tricks will do you any good at all if you don't have any basic common sense. Or if you have basic common sense, but you don't have an understanding of numbers and finance and business, then you're going to be weak in that area also. So in other words, what I'm basically going to do is bum you out about even trying to do anything. Now, I know it's going to sound that way. What I'm really trying to share with you is that the reason that I'm massively successful and that other people that are massively successful are so is because they've mastered a modicum of basic common sense and the ability to look into a situation, even though you don't know the answers, to at least be smart enough to ask the questions. Many of you out there are pessimists like I am. I'm a skeptic by nature, born in Missouri. It's called the Show Me State. I believe none of what I hear and only half of what I see. That's a nice little funny quip, but it's pretty much true. You can tell me that the left is saying this, and I'll say they're lying. And you can tell me the right is saying that, I'll tell you they're lying. And I believe that both sides are lying about 90% of everything they tell you. That's just the way I see it. Because I can prove that in both sides, they're wrong. They're exaggerating. They're overemphasizing. They're not giving you all the facts. They're only giving you the ones they want. Or, in other words, they just obfuscate. They just don't even focus on it. So if you go to one set of facts over here in CNN, they're talking about COVID. And you go over here to Fox and they're talking about the failure in Afghanistan. The CNN guys are talking about the failure of the Republicans and the Fox people are talking about the failure of the Democrats. When the reality is there's enough blame to go around and that both sides are pretty much dumb as a rock when it comes down to your basic common sense decisions. These guys just don't care. And just because you're elected into an office doesn't mean you're smart. I also want to share with you, just because you're a CPA doesn't mean you're smart. And just because you're an attorney doesn't mean you're smart. And by the way, what do you call the last guy in his medical class in college? Doctor. There can be dumb as a rock people as doctors. So today, I've got a lot of information here. And I'm going to go through some of it really quickly because it's pretty obvious the point I'm trying to make with it. And then the rest of some of it I have to go deeper in. Some of it I'm just going to blow some time on it. Because I want you to understand how deep the lack of common sense goes. It's really important. So I'm going to start here with the first one. It's a question that comes in. And by the way, I'm using no names. I'm going to try to use as few locations as I possibly can. Because I don't want to embarrass these people. And I'm not insulting these people. You may think I'm insulting them. What I'm saying is, here's some basic common sense. that needs to be looked at. First question. Good afternoon, Del. My name is blank. I've been listening to your radio show for a few weeks, and I'm really intrigued. I've signed up for your online workshop next month, but my biggest concern about getting into real estate is that I have no savings. Is there some way to get into real estate without having thousands to throw down? Or am I out of luck until I have some savings? Now, this, on the surface, is a very logical question for the gentleman to ask. I think it's a gentleman. I don't even know if it is. It's a very logical question for this person to ask. But common sense says, and that's what this guy is reading to you, is what he's saying to you, is common sense says you got to have money to do this stuff. And the answer is commonsensically, yes, exactly. Why would that ever even become in question? How do you buy real estate with no money? Now, let's foggy the thing up a little bit here. Let's kind of mess it up. We talk about buying houses zero down. I bought an apartment complex with 27 credit cards as the down payment and assumed a loan. So we tell you all these strange, crazy workarounds that we've come up with in 30 years of doing real estate. But those should not be taken as the normal example. You have to actually know the facts around what you're trying to do. And those facts change everything. So in this particular case, when the guy says, can you get in with no money down? It depends. What if you had perfect credit and you had ability to borrow money against something else? Then you could with no money. You have no money, you could still do it. Does that mean it'd be the right thing to do? Not necessarily. So what I'm trying to get you to see is this is a very complicated thing. There is what you would think is just the right answer. But at the same time, I've seen people buy houses nothing down over and over and over again. Would I say that that is the norm? In this day and age, probably not. A year, 2-3 years ago, that was the norm. We did it all the time. So the marketplace changes. So even that which is effective, even that which is right, can be no longer right. And so, again, you have to be able to look at this stuff with some basic common sense, but not only basic common sense. You have to have some deep background knowledge. And that's where mentors come in. We look at this stuff every single day for 30 years, tens of thousands of clients doing tens of thousands of transactions. And when we can look at something, we can go, I know what is prevalent right this moment, but I know one trick or two or 20 that we did in the last 30 years. And so in this particular case, the answer here, which is so obvious in common sense terms, you must have money to buy real estate, is not actually the whole answer. In most cases, it would be. Let's move on to the next one. The next one is very complicated, and it's going to have to be, it's not going to be able to get it in this segment, but I want to do it, so I'll start it and give you the background, then I'll come in with the details in the next segment, because there's no way I can get all the details in. But the basis here is that one of our daughters is living with her boyfriend, and they came across an opportunity to purchase a home that they're living in from a family member, from the grandmother, and the grandmother's going to give them what I would consider a great deal on the house. Now, they've been living there for 6 months to a year already, under the guise of, well, you can live there if you just fix it up for me and take care of it. So they've been fixing it up, and they've got their money and their time invested into the house. So they've got an emotional attachment to the house, and the family has an emotional attachment to the house. But they finally decided that they wanted to buy something, so they own something. And so they decided to go together and buy it from the grandmother. When you come back, I want you to understand how complicated of a question or a decision that could be.
Now, from the files of Del Wamsley.
Time is moving fast at all times. Even when you're wasting your life away, laying on the couch, sitting on the couch, whatever it is. And don't get me wrong, again, I don't want to sound like a hypocrite. I've spent the last 2 days, 2 hours a day or better, out in the sun by my ponds, cleaning my ponds, feeding my fish, working on the yard, enjoying the beauty that we've had here in Houston the last couple of days. It's been the most incredible days I've seen in a long time. And that, and to me, is being well invested. It's well invested into the things in life that are most important, right? But it's that other stuff that's not important. And so here over the last couple of weeks, I have been able to get myself back into motivation to lose weight, get in shape, work out on a regular basis, because I too have all those things that come up in my life. So again, not being a hypocrite, but just simply stating to you, as someone who has been able to overcome the negative force of inertia to want to sit and do nothing. We'll be right back with the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Look at the effects of what happened in 2008 and you compare it to what we are hopefully coming out of right now. Real estate has definitely shown its resiliency. It has provided for people not only a place to live, but a place to work, a place to raise their children, a place to teach their children, a place to prepare all of their meals.
And that's really where the rubber meets the road, is that there are two things that people have to have, and they strive very hard to have them, and that's a roof over their head and food on the table. And if you are investing in something related to either of those two things, you are going to have a winning strategy. And in addition to that, you're providing something of value to the people around you, and creating a win-win situation while creating wealth and passive income for yourself is the best life you can get.
Real estate is resilient. You should have real estate in your portfolio. Join us for the next live online free workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. Today we're discussing issues that are much more complicated when you dig into them than what they appear to be on the surface. The one we're working on right now is a young couple that decide that it's a wise thing to go ahead and buy themselves a piece of real estate. Instead of renting, they've got an opportunity to buy. In addition to the opportunity to buy, they have an opportunity to buy from one of the two's grandparents and buy it at a substantial discount. The house, basically, they're paying $60,000 for it, but it would be worth about $180,000 if they had it appraised, if it was fixed up. And so they're buying quite a bit of equity into the house. They intend to do whatever fix-up there is, as, you know, DIY-type stuff, do it themselves, and then have, you know, a great amount of equity stuck inside of this home. They were able to put some money down, each of them, so they each have some money in the deal, and they are signing a note, and they're both signing the note, and the deed is in both of their names. So on the surface, it seems like, well, that's pretty clear. They both own the house. They both have money in it. They're both paying the mortgage payment. Pretty simple, right? Except for what if? And there's a thousand what ifs in this world when you have people combining together to do things. And what you need to understand is, in this situation, there are all kinds of complications. The first of which is, you're buying the property in a way that you should never buy a piece of real estate in your life. Tenants in common. That means I own all of it and you own all of it. Neither one of us owns half of it. We each own all of it, meaning you can't tell me what to do with it. I can't tell you what to do with it. And so there's really a stalemate from the very beginning as to what and when and where and how the deal should be dealt with. Think about like having a baby. You have a baby, and now you want your half of the baby. You can't cut the baby in half and take your half and the other person get the other half. You have to lose your baby to one person or thy other. It cannot be cut in half. That's what tenants in common are. So you should never own that. How does this always happen? It always happens in family situations where people give their kids, five kids, ownership in a house, and they can't get out of the ownership because four of the kids want to sell the house and one kid wants to keep it to live in. And the one kid has as much rights as the other four all put together. There's absolutely no way you can undo that mess, because you own all of it, each one of you, no matter how many people are on this deed. So it's a terrible way to buy real estate, all right? But there's even more problems with that. What if they decide that they want to break up? How do they get out of this deal? They've got a loan on the property, which they didn't qualify for. What do I mean by that? It's not a traditional loan. It's from the parent, the grandparent. So if they wanted to go refinance the property or whatever, they've got both of their credits hooked up on this thing. It could ruin both of their credits or either one of their credits in this situation. And for them to go get another loan, it would be a little bit complicated because they would have to show that this loan is getting paid off. It's the only way they could really do it. But there's really more than that. Let's talk about right from the very beginning. What is the agreed upon starting value of the house? Let's say today we close, we go home, we get in a big fight, and we break up. What is the value of the house the day we bought it? Is it the $60,000 we paid for it or the $180,000 worth of appraisal value? And is it the appraisal minus the rehab necessary to get there? What do we each have in it? Do we each have the $15,000 we put in it to put $30,000 down? Both of us owe $30,000 on a note. So what is the house really worth if you were to break up today? Do you go by an agreed upon value? If you are, that's fine, but you need to agree upon it before you go into it. This is what it's worth if we break up today. Number two, who gets the home? Well, the kid whose grandparents gave it to them, they're going to think, well, this is really my family home. You can't have it. But at this point, it isn't your family home because you each have bought it and have a deed of trust with both your equal names on it and both of you have a mortgage you're both equal in. So who gets the home? Who moves out if you guys get in a fight? And how long do you have to move out and find some other place to live? How do you get one person off the note? How long do you have to get them off the note? So in other words, even if you can agree, okay, I'm leaving and you're keeping the house, but I want my money back and I want off that note, how do they do it? How long do they have to do it? And what if they just say, I'm not doing it. I'm just going to let you be hung out on that note. You owe on it too. And by the way, the note is what we call joint and severable. Joint and severable means both of you own all of it. You don't each own half of it. That would be two different notes, two different deeds of trust, with each of you signing on each note. But no, this is one note you're both signed on. You both owe all of it. So either one of you, if one of you turns into a crack addict tomorrow and ruins their credit, they ruin yours too. There's no way to get out of it unless you're willing to just pay all the note yourself and give away half of what you just paid for. It's an absolutely terrible way to buy a piece of real estate. Next. Does any of this change with time? In other words, when we first bought it, we thought it was worth $60,000 because that's what we paid for it. But after 6 months from now, after we've done the rehab, now is it worth the appraised value? Or is it still worth the $60,000 we put in it? And by the way, as we're renovating, who pays for all the renovation materials? How do we keep track of how much time each person puts into it? By law, it doesn't matter who pays for the materials. The materials now belong to the house, and the house belongs to both people. And it doesn't matter who puts in all the time to do the renovation because you're not paying them as a contractor. You're just applying that towards equity in the house. And there's no agreed upon how much one person gets from equity because of their labor. And maybe one person just says, I'm not working anymore. And the other person says, I got to get it done so we can get our money out of here. Have all the same questions you had before. What if, who has to get out, when, how, why, where, and how? All that changes. It may change or it may not change. You may say, okay, for the first 60 days or 90 days before the rehab's done, it is my choice to get you out because my grandparents sold us the house for the cheap price. But after we do all that and put all this money in, it's worth more. Now I don't have those rights anymore. But somewhere along the line, you have to decide that, because if you don't decide it in writing, then it is up to the courts to decide, which is going to basically say, you don't have any rights. You both own the house. The next thing is a simple little question. What state must anything that we argue over be litigated in? You say, well, Dell, of course it's got to be, if the house is in Texas, it's got to be Texas. No, it doesn't. You could have this thing litigated in Florida. And so one of you could get mad and move and sue you from Florida, and you have to go to Florida to defend the lawsuit. So you have to state in there, in all the documents, that this will be litigated in Texas. Next, who pays the taxes, the insurance, and the HOA fees, and the mortgage payments while the legal process takes place? So who's going to pay for all that stuff? You haven't thought about any of this, have you? We'll be right back, because there's a lot more to deal with in just one simple little transaction.
It's not just the money, it's the lifestyle. Here's Del Wamsley.
All of you guys that are 75 and feel like you're great. I'm 60 and I feel like four different times in my life a truck hit me. I fell down. They thought I was dead. They took me to the hospital. They took all the pieces, taped them back on again, and threw me back out there. And I go, wow, okay, I'm back again. And then boom, another truck hit me. I've had staph. I've had cancer. I almost died of a ruptured appendix, terrible diabetes, all kinds of structural physical injuries. This all started happening right when I turned 50. And from 50 to 60, this 10 years has just been murder. I can't imagine what 60 to 70 will be like if I even survive it. But to have gone through this and to say, wow, I am so happy to say that in age 27, 28, 29, I decided that I better get something going. And so 2.5 years after I started investing in real estate, at 34 years of age, I was able to retire. I tell you that not to impress you, but to impress upon you. It took me 2.5 years. Some people it takes 3, some it takes 5. I think the longest it's ever taken by anybody that was serious about wanting to retire is 7.
We'll be right back with the Del Walmsley Radio Show. You can't be financially free if you're psychologically imprisoned by disabling belief systems.
Are you ready to break free from your disabling belief systems about money, real estate, retirement, and financial freedom? Then join us for Lifestyles Unlimited's live online free workshop. Learn the belief system that thousands of people like you have used to break free from corporate America and create the lives they have always wanted. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedFreeWorkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. Today we're discussing how what appears to be a simple transaction on the surface can end up being a life-altering, life-changing, life-destroying circumstance in the future because there was no pre-thought put into what you're doing. In other words, people don't really understand how complicated life really is. And so they go out without getting mentoring, without getting legal help, without getting accounting help, and they just do stuff because they're emotionally decide that it's a great idea because somebody told them it was a good idea for some reason. Somehow it got it in their brain that it's a good idea. So we're talking about one of my daughters right now that is in a situation where she's living with her boyfriend. They want to buy a house. They want to buy the house from the grandmother. They're getting a good price on the house. But they didn't put together any documentation other than to buy it together on a deed of trust and a loan from the grandmother, which ties them together in every which way and no way to get loose. And I proposed a bunch of questions for them to answer to see if they'd even thought it through as to what the complications could be. And so I'm going through the questions with you. I'm only about halfway through. The next question is, who pays the taxes, insurance, HOA fees, mortgage payments, while, number one, you're living together? In other words, now that you're living together and you're going to do this stuff, who's going to pay all that stuff? Who's going to be responsible to make sure that stuff gets done? And number two, what happens if you break up? Who's going to be responsible to do all that stuff? And number three, whether you're together or you're broken up, what happens if the person responsible doesn't do it? What do I mean? What happens if they don't pay the taxes and now you have massive penalties and interest? Do both of you have to pay the penalties and interest because one guy didn't do what they're supposed to do? What about insurance? What if you don't get enough insurance, the house burns down and you lose the value of the house? You can't rebuild it. Do you both lose that house? Or does the person that didn't do what they're supposed to do owe the other person money for wrecking their asset? See, these are all things that end up in court. You see them in every stupid TV court case there is out there because they weren't thought through. What about HOA rules? Let's say one of you becomes a drunk. You come home, you drive your car, you park it in the front, you know, the house on the, you know, in the grass, and you don't mow the grass, and the plants all grow over, and the HOA just suing you. What do you do then? Whose fault is that? Who gets sued? And when the lien gets attached to the house, now you both owe for any and all of those problems are joint and severable, meaning you can't get out of it. What have you done to solve that problem? What happens differently if one party dies? If one party dies, does the other party actually have an asset that they can transfer to someone else? Can they share? Can it be inherited? And if so, whom can inherit it? And if you inherit that ownership, what can you do with it? Can you force the other party to sell? Can you force the other party to get a loan and buy you out? Or can they force you to sell and force you to be bought out? These are all things that have to be decided. Let's talk about just living together. What about disputes? If you're 50-50, and you're not really 50-50, you're 100-100, you each own all of it, meaning you can't make a decision unless both of you make it. What happens when you disagree on how much you're going to renovate it? How much it's going to cost to renovate it? Who's going to do the renovation? How about upgrades? You know, hey, we need all new appliances. I don't want all new appliances, but I want all new appliances. Well, how do you decide on that? There's no 51% here. There's 100% and 100%. What about refinancing? Oh, I don't want to sign for more debt. Well, look, it's now worth $200,000. We can go borrow out $180,000, pay off the old loan, get rid of grandma, and have cash. But I don't want to be $180,000 in debt. But it's the right thing to do. But I don't care. I don't want to do it. So you can't do it because you have no rights in this deal the way you have it set up. How about selling the house? You know what? Let's just sell it. No, I don't want to sell it. This is where I want to live. I put my hard-earned sweat and broke my back and did all the work, and I've got all this equity, and I don't want to sell it. No, this is where I want to live for the rest of my life. You can't sell. We're not going anywhere. We're going to live in this piece of garbage old house for the rest of our lives. You want some simpler questions? How about what account is the mortgage payment going to be paid out of? My account, your account, or a joint account? And if you have a joint account and you're living in the same location, you have joint account and you're living in the same location and you're in Texas, does that make you common law married? Are you claiming common law married? If not, what do you have to do to prevent that status from occurring? Because it can just occur to you if you don't watch out. And do you have a personal property list? You realize that if anything you put into the house, stoves, refrigerators, dishwasher, anything that's built into the house now belongs to the house. It doesn't belong to you. You brought all that stuff in. Doesn't mean anything. It's now part of the house. So do you have a personal property list of the stuff you brought into the house? For example, when we got married, I had a personal property list. My wife has a personal property list. Well, while your wife, you own most of the assets. Hey, she's got hundreds of thousands of dollars of jewelry and purses and bags and shoes that I bought her over the last 10 years as gifts. That's her stuff. If we didn't have a personal property list, I'd just say, hey, all that stuff is in my house. It's my stuff. And there's no way to prove it. You've got to have a personal property list. So you see, the point I'm making here is not that they're making a bad decision or not that they shouldn't do what they're doing or whatever. That's not the point. The point is people make these bad decisions in life by making decisions without thinking them through. And 10 years later, 20 years later, it comes back and bites them in the butt. And then I hear them 20 years later, you know, Dell, I had a problem with my first wife and then we lost everything we had between us when we got divorced, and we fought over it, and the attorneys took it all, and then our kids, and there was child support, and there was alimony, and then, okay, after that, I lost my job, and I didn't know why that, because it was this, and I became an alcoholic, and you wake up at 45, 50, 60 years of age, your life is destroyed, and it all started with buying a house with the wrong person. Cadell, that's ridiculous. No, that's exactly the way it starts. And that's why I say, even if you listen to a radio show and go, hey, you know, that real estate stuff sounds pretty good, if you don't have common sense, it doesn't do you any good that stuff works. Because real estate investing does work. In fact, if you go back to question number one, the very first one we answered is, can you do real estate with no money? You have to believe in the premise that real estate is not a job. Real estate is an investment. To invest, you have to have money. Now, can you make real estate a job? Yeah, you can become a real estate agent. You can sell real estate, get commissions. You can flip and wholesale stuff. But that's a job. That's not investing. So again, you can turn it into whatever you want to turn it into in your brain. But 20 years later of being a real estate agent or 20 years later of flipping and wholesaling, you're still broke. You don't own assets. You're not rich. And I see it all the time. Now, the next one I'm going to go into is just about as crazy as can be. And I have to read it to you because, quite honestly, it's so crazy. I don't know if it's really somebody in a lot of pain. In other words, they really are that unable to see the reality of the world. Or if someone's just bluffing me. I mean, this is just too bizarre to believe. But I got this email, and I won't say the name. It says, I'm going to move halfway across the country to be with a woman who has a pizza restaurant and paid for house. And she inherited it from her dad. She wants me to run the restaurant. I managed a pizza hut 50 years ago when I was a teenager. So that qualifies him now to manage this business, right? But I was an employee working for a corporation. I wasn't responsible for the building and knowing all the laws and regulations needed to comply with it. She's been out of the country with the Army and has been away from home for 2 years. She's coming home this week. I asked her who has been running the business. She said a friend has been running it. I asked how much cash flow does the restaurant produce monthly. She said she doesn't know, but it's a lot. I suspect the friend has always been running it and she has been hands off. I'm thinking that I need to get her listening to you and hope that she hears you say that we should work on the business, not in the business. I never took any business courses in high school or undergrad college. But how much do I need to know about accounting to know that the friend and the CPA aren't stealing the profits? She mentions a number that was a little under $500,000 that we could invest. I intend to put the restaurant cash flow into real estate. So when you read the sentences, he's got a lot of good questions, right? He's got a lot of good questions that he's looking for the answers to. And he's also bringing up some very important points, like he really isn't qualified to run this restaurant. And he really doesn't know what to do. But yet this woman is blindly going to trust this guy that doesn't know what to do to take her restaurant and $500,000 worth of money and go invest it. When we come back, you'll hear the rest of this incredible story.
Now, intel from the files of Del Wamsley.
I got back into real estate about 1997, 98. It was the first year I ever bought a house. And I bought a three-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage house for $25,000. I didn't pay $25,000 for the house. I put $2,000 down out of my pocket to buy the house. It was 10% down, which was $2,500, $500 to closing costs, which was $3,000. But the tenant, before I moved in, the broker had leased the house, and he gave me at closing a check for $500.
Welcome to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Del challenges the status quo, questions everything, and empowers you to return to your core beliefs to make your life better. If you're ready to hear the truth and get your roadmap to the lifestyle you really want, the next hour will change your life. And now, your host, self-made millionaire, national award-winning investor of the year, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Wamsley.
Welcome to the Del Wamsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Wamsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Well, my friends, today I'm going to discuss a rather disjointed argument for the fact that the ability to be successful in many, many areas comes down to your ability to decipher, to understand the information in that area necessary to make the right decisions, and your accumulation of the correct information. So what I'm trying to say is that people want to think, they want to believe that there's a secret sauce. They want to believe, for instance, that there's a secret real estate trick. There's tricks, there's secrets, there's things. You can read them in a book, you can pick them up over the internet, and that those little things will be what is necessary to become successful. And I'm here today to suggest that that's just not the case, is that there are millions of little tricks that we use every single day in investing in real estate and in or everything else in life, and that none of those tricks will do you any good at all if you don't have any basic common sense. Or if you have basic common sense, but you don't have an understanding of numbers and finance and business, then you're going to be weak in that area also. So in other words, what I'm basically going to do is bum you out about even trying to do anything. Now, I know it's going to sound that way. What I'm really trying to share with you is that the reason that I'm massively successful and that other people that are massively successful are so is because they've mastered a modicum of basic common sense and the ability to look into a situation, even though you don't know the answers, to at least be smart enough to ask the questions. Many of you out there are pessimists like I am. I'm a skeptic by nature, born in Missouri. It's called the Show Me State. I believe none of what I hear and only half of what I see. That's a nice little funny quip, but it's pretty much true. You can tell me that the left is saying this, and I'll say they're lying. And you can tell me the right is saying that, I'll tell you they're lying. And I believe that both sides are lying about 90% of everything they tell you. That's just the way I see it. Because I can prove that in both sides they're wrong. They're exaggerating. They're overemphasizing. They're not giving you all the facts. They're only giving you the ones they want. Or, in other words, they just obfuscate. They just don't even focus on it. So if you go to one set of facts over here in CNN, they're talking about COVID. And you go over here to Fox, and they're talking about the failure in Afghanistan. The CNN guys are talking about the failure of the Republicans, and the Fox people are talking about the failure of the Democrats. When the reality is, there's enough blame to go around, and that both sides are pretty much dumb as a rock when it comes down to your basic common sense decisions. These guys just don't care. And just because you're elected into an office doesn't mean you're smart. I also want to share with you, just because you're a CPA doesn't mean you're smart. And just because you're an attorney doesn't mean you're smart. And by the way, what do you call the last guy in his medical class in college? Doctor. There can be dumb as a rock people as doctors. So today, I've got a lot of information here. And I'm going to go through some of it really quickly because it's pretty obvious the point I'm trying to make with it. And then the rest of some of it I have to go deeper in. Some of it I'm just going to blow some time on it. Because I want you to understand how deep the lack of common sense goes. It's really important. So I'm going to start here with the first one. It's a question that comes in. And by the way, I'm using no names. I'm going to try to use as few locations as I possibly can. Because I don't want to embarrass these people. And I'm not insulting these people. You may think I'm insulting them. What I'm saying is, here's some basic common sense that needs to be looked at. First question. Good afternoon, Del. My name is blank. I've been listening to your radio show for a few weeks, and I'm really intrigued. I've signed up for your online workshop next month, but my biggest concern about getting into real estate is that I have no savings. Is there some way to get into real estate without having thousands to throw down, or am I out of luck until I have some savings? Now, this, on the surface, is a very logical question for the gentleman to ask. I think it's a gentleman. I don't even know if it is. It's a very logical question for this person to ask. But common sense says, and that's what this guy is reading to you, is what he's saying to you, is common sense says you got to have money to do this stuff. And the answer is commonsensically, yes, exactly. Why would that ever even become in question? How do you buy real estate with no money? Now, let's foggy the thing up a little bit here. Let's kind of mess it up. We talk about buying houses zero down. I bought an apartment complex with 27 credit cards as the down payment and assumed a loan. So we tell you all these strange, crazy workarounds that we've come up with in 30 years of doing real estate, but those should not be taken as the normal example. You have to actually know the facts around what you're trying to do, and those facts change everything. So in this particular case, when the guy says, can you get in with no money down? Depends. What if you had perfect credit and you had ability to borrow money against something else? Then you could with no money. You have no money, you could still do it. Does that mean it'd be the right thing to do? Not necessarily. So what I'm trying to get you to see is this is a very complicated thing. There is what you would think is just the right answer. But at the same time, I've seen people buy houses nothing down over and over and over again. Would I say that that is the norm? In this day and age, probably not. A year, 2-3 years ago, that was the norm. We did it all the time. So the marketplace changes. So even that which is effective, even that which is right, can be no longer right. And so, again, you have to be able to look at this stuff with some basic common sense, but not only basic common sense. You have to have some deep background knowledge. And that's where mentors come in. We look at this stuff every single day for 30 years, tens of thousands of clients doing tens of thousands of transactions. And when we can look at something, we can go, I know what is prevalent right this moment, but I know one trick or two or 20 that we did in the last 30 years. And so in this particular case, the answer here, which is so obvious in common sense terms, you must have money to buy real estate, is not actually the whole answer. In most cases, it would be. Let's move on to the next one. The next one is very complicated, and it's going to have to be, it's not going to be able to get it in this segment, but I want to do it, so I'll start it and give you the background, then I'll come in with the details in the next segment because there's no way I can get all the details in. But the basis here is that one of our daughters is living with her boyfriend, and they came across an opportunity to purchase a home that they're living in from a family member, from the grandmother. And the grandmother's going to give them what I would consider a great deal on the house. Now, they've been living there for 6 months to a year already under the guise of, well, you can live there if you just fix it up for me and take care of it. So they've been fixing it up, and they've got their money and their time invested into the house. So they've got an emotional attachment to the house, and the family has an emotional attachment to the house. But they finally decided that they wanted to buy something, so they own something. And so they decided to go together and buy it from the grandmother. When you come back, I want you to understand how complicated of a question or a decision that could be.
Now, from the files of Del Wamsley.
Time is moving fast at all times. Even when you're wasting your life away, laying on the couch, sitting on the couch, whatever it is. And don't get me wrong, again, I don't want to sound like a hypocrite. I've spent the last 2 days, 2 hours a day or better out in the sun by my ponds, cleaning my ponds, feeding my fish, working on the yard, enjoying the beauty that we've had here in Houston the last couple of days. It's been the most incredible days I've seen in a long time. And that, and to me, is being well invested. It's well invested into the things in life that are most important, right? But it's that other stuff that's not important. And so here over the last couple of weeks, I have been able to get myself back into motivation to lose weight, get in shape, work out on a regular basis, because I too have all those things that come up in my life. So again, not being a hypocrite, but just simply stating to you, as someone who has been able to overcome the negative force of inertia to want to sit and do nothing.
We'll be right back with the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
Look at the effects of what happened in 2008 and you compare it to what we are hopefully coming out of right now. Real estate has definitely shown its resiliency. It has provided for people not only a place to live, but a place to work, a place to raise their children, a place to teach their children, a place to prepare all of their meals.
And that's really where the rubber meets the road, is that there are two things that people have to have, and they strive very hard to have them, and that's a roof over their head and food on the table. And if you are investing in something related to either of those two things, you are going to have a winning strategy. And in addition to that, you're providing something of value to the people around you, and creating a win-win situation while creating wealth and passive income for yourself is the best life you can get.
Real estate is resilient. You should have real estate in your portfolio. Join us for the next live online free workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America one person at a time, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to Del Wamsley Radio Show. Today we're discussing issues that are much more complicated when you dig into them than what they appear to be on the surface. The one we're working on right now is a young couple that decide that it's a wise thing to go ahead and buy themselves a piece of real estate. Instead of renting, they've got an opportunity to buy. In addition to the opportunity to buy, they have an opportunity to buy from one of the two's grandparents and buy it at a substantial discount. The house, basically, they're paying $60,000 for it, but it would be worth about $180,000 if they had it appraised, if it was fixed up. And so they're buying quite a bit of equity into the house. They intend to do whatever fix-up there is, as, you know, DIY-type stuff, do it themselves, and then have, you know, a great amount of equity stuck inside of this home. They were able to put some money down, each of them, so they each have some money in the deal, and they are signing a note, and they're both signing the note, and the deed is in both of their names. So on the surface, it seems like, well, that's pretty clear. They both own the house. They both have money in it. They're both paying the mortgage payment. Pretty simple, right? Except for what if? And there's a thousand what-ifs in this world when you have people combining together to do things. And what you need to understand is in this situation, there are all kinds of complications. The first of which is you're buying the property in a way that you should never buy a piece of real estate in your life. Tenants in common. That means I own all of it and you own all of it. Neither one of us owns half of it. We each own all of it, meaning you can't tell me what to do with it. I can't tell you what to do with it. And so there's really a stalemate from the very beginning as to what and when and where and how the deal should be dealt with. Think about like having a baby. You have a baby, and now you want your half of the baby. You can't cut the baby in half and take your half and the other person get the other half. You have to lose your baby to one person or thy other. It cannot be cut in half. That's what tenants in common are. So you should never own that. How does this always happen? It always happens in family situations where people give their kids, five kids, ownership in a house, and they can't get out of the ownership because four of the kids want to sell the house and one kid wants to keep it to live in. And the one kid has as much rights as the other four all put together. There's absolutely no way you can undo that mess. Because you own all of it, each one of you, no matter how many people are on this deed. So it's a terrible way to buy real estate, all right? But there's even more problems with that. What if they decide that they want to break up? How do they get out of this deal? They've got a loan on the property, which they didn't qualify for. What do I mean by that? It's not a traditional loan. It's from the parent, the grandparent. So if they wanted to go refinance the property or whatever, they've got both of their credits hooked up on this thing. It could ruin both of their credits or either one of their credits in this situation. And for them to go get another loan, it would be a little bit complicated because they would have to show that this loan is getting paid off. It's the only way they could really do it. But there's really more than that. Let's talk about right from the very beginning. What is the agreed upon starting value of the house? Let's say today we close, we go home, we get in a big fight, and we break up. What is the value of the house the day we bought it? Is it the $60,000 we paid for it, or the $180,000 worth of appraisal value? And is it the appraisal minus the rehab necessary to get there? What do we each have in it? Do we each have the $15,000 we put in it to put $30,000 down? Both of us owe $30,000 on a note. So what is the house really worth? If you were to break up today, do you go by an agreed upon value? If you are, that's fine, but you need to agree upon it before you go into it. This is what it's worth if we break up today. Number two, who gets the home? Well, the kid whose grandparents gave it to them, they're going to think, well, this is really my family home. You can't have it. But at this point, it isn't your family home because you each have bought it and have a deed of trust with both your equal names on it and both of you have a mortgage you're both equal in. So who gets the home? Who moves out if you guys get in a fight? And how long do you have to move out and find some other place to live? How do you get one person off the note? How long do you have to get them off the note? So in other words, even if you can agree, okay, I'm leaving and you're keeping the house, but I want my money back and I want off that note, how do they do it? How long do they have to do it? And what if they just say, I'm not doing it. I'm just going to let you be hung out on that note. You owe on it too. And by the way, the note is what we call joint and severable. Joint and severable means both of you own all of it. You don't each own half of it. That would be two different notes, two different deeds of trust, with each of you signing on each note. But no, this is one note you're both signed on. You both owe all of it. So either one of you, if one of you turns into a crack addict tomorrow and ruins their credit, they ruin yours too. There's no way to get out of it unless you're willing to just pay all the note yourself and give away half of what you just paid for. It's an absolutely terrible way to buy a piece of real estate. Next, does any of this change with time? In other words, when we first bought it, we thought it was worth $60,000 because that's what we paid for it. But after 6 months from now, after we've done the rehab, now is it worth the appraised value? Or is it still worth the $60,000 we put in it? And by the way, as we're renovating, who pays for all the renovation materials? How do we keep track of how much time each person puts into it? By law, it doesn't matter who pays for the materials. The materials now belong to the house, and the house belongs to both people. And it doesn't matter who puts in all the time to do the renovation because you're not paying them as a contractor. You're just applying that towards equity in the house. And there's no agreed upon how much one person gets from equity because of their labor. And maybe one person just says, I'm not working anymore. And the other person says, I got to get it done so we can get our money out of here. Have all the same questions you had before. What if, who has to get out, when, how, why, where, and how. All that changes, doesn't it? May change or it may not change. You may say, okay, for the first 60 days or 90 days before the rehab's done, it is my choice to get you out because my grandparents sold us a house for the cheap price. But after we do all that and put all this money in, it's worth more. Now I don't have those rights anymore. But somewhere along the line, you have to decide that, because if you don't decide it in writing, then it is up to the courts to decide, which is going to basically say you don't have any rights. You both own the house. The next thing is a simple little question. What state must anything that we argue over be litigated in? You say, well, Dell, of course it's got to be. If the house is in Texas, it's got to be Texas. No, it doesn't. You could have this thing litigated in Florida. And so one of you could get mad and move and sue you from Florida, and you have to go to Florida to defend the lawsuit. So you have to state in there, in all the documents, that this will be litigated in Texas. Next, who pays the taxes, the insurance, and the HOA fees, and the mortgage payments while the legal process takes place? So who's going to pay for all that stuff? You haven't thought about any of this, have you? We'll be right back, because there's a lot more to deal with in just one simple little transaction.
It's not just the money, it's the lifestyle. Here's Del Wamsley.
All of you guys that are 75 and feel like you're great. I'm 60 and I feel like four different times in my life a truck hit me. I fell down. They thought I was dead. They took me to the hospital. They took all the pieces, taped them back on again, and threw me back out there. And I go, wow, okay, I'm back again. And then boom, another truck hit me. I've had staph. I've had cancer. I almost died of a ruptured appendix, terrible diabetes, all kinds of structural, physical injuries. This all started happening right when I turned 50. And from 50 to 60, this 10 years has just been murder. I can't imagine what 60 to 70 will be like if I even survive it. But to have gone through this and to say, wow, I am so happy to say that in age 27, 28, 29, I decided that I better get something going. And so 2.5 years after I started investing in real estate, at 34 years of age, I was able to retire. I tell you that not to impress you, but to impress upon you. It took me 2.5 years. Some people it takes three, some it takes five. I think the longest it's ever taken by anybody that was serious about wanting to retire is seven.
We'll be right back with the Del Wamsley Radio Show. You can't be financially free if you're psychologically imprisoned by disabling belief systems.
Are you ready to break free from your disabling belief systems about money, real estate, retirement, and financial freedom? Then join us for Lifestyles Unlimited's live online free workshop. Learn the belief system that thousands of people like you have used to break free from corporate America and create the lives they have always wanted. Register at lifestylesunlimitedfreeworkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to Del Wamsley Radio Show. Today we're discussing how what appears to be a simple transaction on the surface can end up being a life-altering, life-changing, life-destroying circumstance in the future because there was no pre-thought put into what you're doing. In other words, people don't really understand how complicated life really is. And so they go out without getting mentoring, without getting legal help, without getting accounting help, and they just do stuff because they're emotionally decide that it's a great idea because somebody told them it was a good idea for some reason. Somehow it got it in their brain that it's a good idea. So we're talking about one of my daughters right now that is in a situation where she's living with her boyfriend. They want to buy a house. They want to buy the house from the grandmother. They're getting a good price on the house. But they didn't put together any documentation other than to buy it together on a deed of trust and a loan from the grandmother, which ties them together in every which way and no way to get loose. And I proposed a bunch of questions for them to answer to see if they'd even thought it through as to what the complications could be. And so I'm going through the questions with you. I'm only about halfway through. The next question is, who pays the taxes, insurance, HOA fees, mortgage payments, while, number one, you're living together? In other words, now that you're living together and you're going to do this stuff, who's going to pay all that stuff? Who's going to be responsible to make sure that stuff gets done? And number two, what happens if you break up? Who's going to be responsible to do all that stuff? And number three, whether you're together or you're broken up, what happens if the person responsible doesn't do it? What do I mean? What happens if they don't pay the taxes and now you have massive penalties and interest? Do both of you have to pay the penalties and interest because one guy didn't do what they're supposed to do? What about insurance? What if you don't get enough insurance, the house burns down and you lose the value of the house? You can't rebuild it. Do you both lose that house? Or does the person that didn't do what they're supposed to do owe the other person money for wrecking their asset? See, these are all things that end up in court. You see them in every stupid TV court case there is out there because they weren't thought through. What about HOA rules? Let's say one of you becomes a drunk. You come home, you drive your car, you park it in the front, you know, the house on the, you know, in the grass, and you don't mow the grass, and the plants all grow over, and the HOA just suing you. What do you do then? Whose fault is that? Who gets sued? And when the lien gets attached to the house, now you both owe for any and all of those problems are joint and severable, meaning you can't get out of it. What have you done to solve that problem? What happens differently if one party dies? If one party dies, does the other party actually have an asset that they can transfer to someone else? Can they share? Can it be inherited? And if so, whom can inherit it? And if you inherit that ownership, what can you do with it? Can you force the other party to sell? Can you force the other party to get a loan and buy you out? Or can they force you to sell and force you to be bought out? These are all things that have to be decided. Let's talk about just living together. What about disputes? If you're 50-50, and you're not really 50-50, you're 100-100, you each own all of it, meaning you can't make a decision unless both of you make it. What happens when you disagree on how much you're going to renovate it? How much it's going to cost to renovate it? Who's going to do the renovation? How about upgrades? You know, hey, we need all new appliances. I don't want all new appliances, but I want all new appliances. Well, how do you decide on that? There's no 51% here. There's 100% and 100%. What about refinancing? Oh, I don't want to sign for more debt. Well, look, it's now worth $200,000. We can go borrow out $180,000, pay off the old loan, get rid of grandma, and have cash. But I don't want to be $180,000 in debt. But it's the right thing to do. But I don't care. I don't want to do it. So you can't do it because you have no rights in this deal the way you have it set up. How about selling the house? You know what? Let's just sell it. No, I don't want to sell it. This is where I want to live. I put my hard-earned sweat and broke my back and did all the work, and I've got all this equity, and I don't want to sell it. No, this is where I want to live for the rest of my life. You can't sell. We're not going anywhere. We're going to live in this piece of garbage old house for the rest of our lives. You want some simpler questions? How about what account is the mortgage payment going to be paid out of? My account, your account, or a joint account? And if you have a joint account and you're living in the same location, you have joint account and you're living in the same location and you're in Texas, does that make you common law married? Are you claiming common law married? If not, what do you have to do to prevent that status from occurring? Because it can just occur to you if you don't watch out. And do you have a personal property list? You realize that if anything you put into the house, stoves, refrigerators, dishwasher, anything that's built into the house now belongs to the house. It doesn't belong to you. You brought all that stuff in. Doesn't mean anything. It's now part of the house. So do you have a personal property list of the stuff you brought into the house? For example, when we got married, I had a personal property list. My wife has a personal property list. Well, why your wife? You own almost the assets. Hey, she's got hundreds of thousands of dollars of jewelry and purses and bags and shoes that I bought her over the last 10 years as gifts. That's her stuff. If we didn't have a personal property list, I'd just say, hey, all that stuff is in my house. It's my stuff. And there's no way to prove it. You've got to have a personal property list. So you see, the point I'm making here is not that they're making a bad decision or not that they shouldn't do what they're doing or whatever. That's not the point. The point is people make these bad decisions in life by making decisions without thinking them through. And 10 years later, 20 years later, it comes back and bites them in the butt. And then I hear them 20 years later, you know, Dell, I had a problem with my first wife and then we lost everything we had between us when we got divorced, and we fought over it, and the attorneys took it all, and then our kids, and there was child support, and there was alimony, and then, okay, after that, I lost my job, and I didn't know why that, because it was this, and I became an alcoholic, and you wake up at 45, 50, 60 years of age, your life is destroyed, and it all started with buying a house with the wrong person. Goodell, that's ridiculous. No, that's exactly the way it starts. And that's why I say, even if you listen to a radio show and go, hey, you know, that real estate stuff sounds pretty good, if you don't have common sense, it doesn't do you any good that that stuff works. Because real estate investing does work. In fact, if you go back to question number one, the very first one we answered is, can you do real estate with no money? You have to premise, you have to believe in the premise that real estate is not a job. Real estate is an investment. To invest, you have to have money. Now, can you make real estate a job? Yeah, you can become a real estate agent. You can sell real estate, get commissions. You can flip and wholesale stuff. But that's a job. That's not investing. So again, you can turn it into whatever you want to turn it into in your brain, but 20 years later of being a real estate agent or 20 years later of flipping and wholesaling, you're still broke. You don't own assets. You're not rich. And I see it all the time. Now, the next one I'm going to go into is just about as crazy as can be. And I have to read it to you because, quite honestly, it's so crazy. I don't know if it's really somebody in a lot of pain. In other words, they really are that unable to see the reality of the world, or if someone's just bluffing me. I mean, this is just too bizarre to believe. But I got this email, and I won't say the name. It says, I'm going to move halfway across the country to be with a woman who has a pizza restaurant and paid for house, and she inherited it from her dad. She wants me to run the restaurant. I managed a pizza hut 50 years ago when I was a teenager, so that qualifies him now to manage this business, right? But I was an employee working for a corporation. I wasn't responsible for the building and knowing all the laws and regulations needed to comply with it. She's been out of the country with the Army and has been away from home for 2 years. She's coming home this week. I asked her who has been running the business. She said a friend has been running it. I asked how much cash flow does the restaurant produce monthly. She said she doesn't know, but it's a lot. I suspect the friend has always been running it and she has been hands off. I'm thinking that I need to get her listening to you and hope that she hears you say that we should work on the business, not in the business. I never took any business courses in high school or undergrad college. But how much do I need to know about accounting to know that the friend and the CPA aren't stealing the profits? She mentions a number that was a little under $500,000 that we could invest. I intend to put the restaurant cash flow into real estate. So, when you read the sentences, he's got a lot of good questions, right? He's got a lot of good questions that he's looking for the answers to. And he's also bringing up some very important points, like he really isn't qualified to run this restaurant. And he really doesn't know what to do. But yet, this woman is blindly going to trust this guy that doesn't know what to do to take her restaurant and $500,000 worth of money and go invest it. When we come back, you'll hear the rest of this incredible story.
Now, intel from the files of Del Wamsley.
I got back into real estate about 1997, 98. It was the first year I ever bought a house. And I bought a three-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage house for $25,000. I didn't pay $25,000 for the house. I put $2,000 down out of my pocket to buy the house. It was 10% down, which was $2,500, $500 to closing costs, which was $3,000. But the tenant before I moved in, the broker had leased the house and he gave me at closing a check for $500 for the rent plus $500 for the security deposit. So I had $1,000. I only brought $2,000 to the table. Now, that house today is worth in excess of $150,000. We'll be right back with the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
Everyone is asking, is it still a good time to invest in real estate?
We see no indication that for the foreseeable future, and even the unforeseeable future, no indication whatsoever that real estate is suddenly not going to be the best vehicle for creating wealth and passive income for your family. And so that would say that now is the time to get in. And we very rarely talk about this because we talk about cash flow. But now we're talking a little bit about capital gains and what the future brings in that property. Because it's real. At the end of the day, you have all your cash flow, but you've got this nice capital gain when you sell. And the inflation that we see and the reasons for it are going to continue, and we're going to see great capital gains at the end of the line when we sell these properties.
Get in on the next free workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
The radio show today, we've been discussing issues that on the surface may seem simplistic. Once you dig into them, they become very complicated. And you have to be able to bundle a good amount of common sense with a large amount of basic legal and accounting and business information to be able to come across with a game plan that makes sense. Now, this last email that I've been following is very strange, where this people had met, and the lady's asking this guy to take over her business and her money and her home and go invest it all for her. So I emailed back to him. Very interesting to me, and it's curious. It didn't seem really logical that this would happen. I said, why would she want you to run the business if you don't have any business experience? How did this come about? And what is your relationship with this lady? How is she going to pay you for doing all this? And what will happen to the person that's running the business now? In other words, that person may own part of that business. She just can't give it to you. That person may sue you for termination of a business that they have a business contracted agreement with. None of that's known. There's just too much here. Why would she do this? What is she going to pay you? Are you just going to be her lackey and do all this for her and she's going to make all the money? Or is she actually giving you the money? I mean, this is a very strange, almost scary situation. In fact, it is a scary situation. So here's what he wrote back, and this is when I knew that we had a real problem here. He said, I think she just doesn't want me to be idle. In other words, that's why she wants him to run the business. She didn't want him to be idle, which means right now he's idle. He has nothing to do. So how is this guy supporting himself? Which starts to lead me to believe, is this guy scamming her or is she scamming him? Right? There's nothing about this that could be totally legit. There's got to be a scam in here one way or the other, and I can't figure it out. He goes on and says, we haven't met face-to-face yet, but will Sunday evening. Okay, because I ask him, how did this come about? What is your relationship? He said, well, we haven't met face-to-face yet, but we will this Sunday evening. And then he goes on, but we are lovers and probably will get married. There it is. Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs meter goes off the hook. How can you have never met this person face-to-face and be her lover? How could you marry a person you've never met? Is this guy in prison? Is this one of those prison relationships where you write to some guy that's a murderer because you feel sorry for him, or you're just so out of it in the world as far as a normal human being that you have to go for that kind of a person? I don't get it. It goes on and says, I've been curious how much I'm going to be paid. She has kind of hinted that what is hers is ours. In other words, he believes she's going to give him $1 million worth of stuff, a business and $500,000 worth of assets, but has not stated it explicitly. I have wondered what will happen to the person running it now myself. He wonders what's going to happen to the person running it now. Maybe she's tired of it and eager for blank to come home so she can get out of it. I don't know who blank, I'm not going to use the name because I don't want to use names, but it's somebody's name. And maybe blank will come home so she can get out of it. Maybe she's got her daughter running it. It might be the situation. Then it goes on and says, off the subject, where is the Lifestyles location closest to? And they give me a town out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, this is like way out in the middle of nowhere. Small town. So maybe these are just totally unsophisticated people. Bottom line, there's no need to have to beat up on these people. They might be fine people, but you know what? This scenario is a disaster, not even waiting to happen. It's a disaster in the process of happening, and nothing good can come out of this situation. If you listen to all of the legal questions that I brought up earlier in the show about just buying one rent house together, can you imagine the 20 or 30 or 40 page scenario of questions I could put together about this scenario right here? about all the questions about how it's going to work and why and who and how much and when and what if. This is disaster. Yet people, for some reason, believe you can go into a life with a handshake. You can go into a marriage with never meeting the other person, just talking to them over the internet or the phone. There is a lack of common sense out there, folks. I don't even care if you have a college education. You could have a college education and still be this far whacked out. I mean, literally, I don't know what else to call it. I can't even imagine someone telling me they're going to marry someone they've never met. Bar some religious thing where your parents pick your wife for you, like other nationalities. Bar something like that where it's an arranged marriage. I have no idea how somebody could marry someone they've never met. And even in arranged marriages, they have meetups, and they get to meet, and they have dates with people around or whatever, you know. I just want you to think about this as just the tip of the iceberg of the kind of craziness that over the last 30 years I've had to answer questions to and try to make sense of really logical business ideas to people who can't even figure out commonsensical problems. Before I leave, there are two or three of you I told I would answer your questions for you today on the show. I didn't get to them. I will pick them up on the news bag next week. I'm sorry I didn't get to them, but this stuff, this was just too important to pass it by because it's just too obvious how so many people end up 30, 40, 50, 60 years of age completely broke, completely destroyed as financial beings.
Del Walmsley on how to live the lifestyle.
I remember a preacher one time, he took over a church. He started giving a sermon, and everybody applauded the sermon, thought it was really good. They congratulated him, that's really a good sermon. Then the next Sunday, he gave the same sermon again. And they go, yeah, that's a really good sermon. And then the third week, he gave the same sermon again. Finally, the church elders pulled him aside one day and said, hey, do you realize you're giving the same sermon every day? You haven't changed it up in 3 weeks now. And he looks at them and says, yeah, and I'm going to keep giving it until you guys get it. That's the way I feel sometimes. I feel like I've been giving the same sermon for 26 years. And some of you get it, and bless your hearts and souls. Man, I'll tell you, like last night I spent some time with people. There's some great, great members of Lifestyles. I love them. And the accomplishments that they've made are incredible.
Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, teaching you the opposite of everything you've been taught, so you can obtain the results you've never obtained. Join us 7 days a week. Can't get enough? Visit DellOnTheRadio.com to listen to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, access past show podcasts, and join the conversation.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.